I very much appreciate being given the opportunity to talk about the Mississippi Mudcat Band. I actually knew Fiddler Bill McGee when I was a little kid. His farm was just about 5 miles from my grandfather's farm, and he went to the same church. I was only 10 years old when I left that place, so we weren't exactly close, but although some of my family knew him pretty well. So, without Doc Weaver, the St. Louis Cardinal trainer and mandolin player, the marvelous musical Mississippi Mudcat Band might never have come into existence or won the support of Cardinal management. He brought a phonograph into the St. Louis clubhouse in the early 30s and encouraged the players to sing and play music, in the belief that music could chain the gang's rowdy energy, increase team camaraderie, and keep them out of trouble during the many hours of downtime. But it was Pepper Martin's talent for self-promotion that was responsible for the Mudcats' unique place in baseball history. Only the wild horse of the Osage could have organized teammates into a band, arranged performances, and taken advantage of radio and team road trips to make the band a national phenomenon. With a new guitar in hand, a Christmas gift from his wife Ruby, and a harmonica in his pocket, Martin was looking for teammates to jam with for the spring of 1937. He missed his closest friends on the club, Dizzy Dean, who was in a protracted salary holdout, and first baseman Ripper Collins, whom the Cardinals had traded to the Chicago Cubs. He found two of the biggest characters in baseball in pitcher Lon Warnke and Stan Frenchie Bordagarea, utility infielder-outfielder, both new trade acquisitions, and soon enlisted rookie catcher Mickey Owen, rookie pitcher Bill McGee, the best musician in the Gas House Gang, whether playing fiddle, guitar, harmonica, piano, trumpet, or as J. Roy Stockton wrote, anything else anybody happens to have. And journeyman Bob Whelan, a recent arrival from the St. Louis Browns, who possessed a decent voice, a strong sense of humor, an ability with a guitar, and a willingness to pick up a whiskey jug or washtub bass. Other Cardinals joined the team's jam session. Let's see here. And as many as 20 Mudcats Cardinals were eventually identified as part of the band. Doesn't mean they were part of the band, just means they were identified by somebody or appeared in a photo often. If I think I have some of the photos here. Here's the core members. This is has Frenchie Bordagarea on fiddle, Lon Warnke on cornet, Ray Harrell on glass jug, Mike Ryba, Mickey Owen and all in the back row, then Cy Johnson, Bob Whelan, Pepper Martin on guitar, and Brucey Agrodowski in the front. Here we have one of the most famous pictures of the photos of the band, and you can see the somebody in a Cub uniform, Rip Collins, in the front row. He was an honorary member of the band, maybe a member of the band when the Cubs and the Cardinals were in the same city. And then here we have in the back row, Dick Siebert, Ray Harrell, Herb Bremer, that should be two M's, and Jimmy Brown. So a lot of players were actually identified as members of the band. But for the money events, there was just a core of five or six. The Cardinals simply enjoyed performing cowboy bands together to fill off time during spring training. According to reporter George Kirksey, quote, a rollicking roughhouse crew of ballplayers from St. Louis was gathering every night in the team hotel lobby after their evening meal to sing, led by Martin on harmonica and accompanied by McGee on guitar. Martin wasn't confident playing the guitar with others in public, so he stuck to the harmonica in these early performances. By St. Patrick's Day, the Cardinal players were regularly piling into Martin's truck to find somewhere to perform and pick up a little money by passing the hat. According to AP columnist Eddie Breitz, these baseball troubadours consisted largely of singers and harmonica players, with outfielder Terry Moore whistling tunes like Listen to the Mockingbird. Speechifying was often part of the entertainment, according to Breeks. Sometimes they take Mike Ryba along and exhibit him as a one-man ball club after a lengthy ballyhoo by Professor Jim Winford, who juggles a few adjectives and adverbs around in his throat and let him have it. Stockton's mention of a quartet of musicians, Martin Bordegray, Whelan, and Mickey Owen, in his March 23rd column was the first indication that Pepper was forming a band. Ed Sims, sportscaster and radio commissioner for the Daytona Beach station WFMJ, with a reputation for live, unpredictable comic programming, first put the Mudcats on the air that March, and Pepper grasped the importance of radio right away. Most successful hillbilly bands of the 30s toured the country for exposure on as many radio stations as possible, and Martin saw how sports radio could give the Mudcats an advantage. When Birmingham, Alabama reporters Henry Vance and Zip Newman came looking to interview Cardinal players, Martin started hustling. "Shucks, we've got a great hillbilly band on the Gas House Gang, but the trouble is we left the guitar and harmonica down at the station with our baggage. You see, it takes a box and a harp to put over this hillbilly stuff. Then the boys are so scattered that I don't know how in heck we could get a hold of Lon Warnicky and Wheel and the other members of the quartet. But in the absence of the entire group from the Met, I suppose Frenchie Bordegray and I would be able to accommodate you." Vance said the four crashed the studio, butted right into a program in which Ziegler's Little Pigs were appearing, and they were all on the air in minutes. In exchange for Martin's interview, he got a bit of hillbilly vocalizing by Martin and Bordegray. To avoid angering Frisch, Martin said, "We don't let the band members interfere with our ball playing. We play as hard on the field as we know how, but some folks just can't see us relax after a game. We never take our musical instruments to the clubhouse, and I don't see why there should be any fuss about anything." Exhibition games were another matter. The Cardinals even advertised Mudcat shows to bring fans to the game. And when Johnny Mize got to his locker after eloping with Jenny Adams in August, Mudcat serenaded the native Georgian with the wedding march and marching through Georgia. Away from the ballpark, the Mudcats enjoyed playing Agents of Chaos. Columnist Hugh Bradley of the New York Post described the Mudcats clad in cerise pajamas as they rehearsed in a hotel room one June morning in 1937. Bradley wrote that he walked by a horde of hotel patrons, tired and angry about the noise the band was making, with Pepper playing guitar while standing on his head as Bradley entered the room. Martin, who took every opportunity to annoy classical music fan Frankie Frisch, sometimes hung out on the window ledge playing his guitar, believing Frisch's room was directly under his. It wasn't. The Mudcats were a cowboy band along the lines of Gene Autry and Bob Wills and the Texas Playboy, a style of country western music native to the south central states that featured the fiddle instead of the banjo, which was more popular with Appalachian bands. The Mudcats shirts, I was hoping to have a picture of that. The Mudcats shirts, adapted the Cardinal uniform logo with two birds perched on a bat with the name Mudcats spelled out in red instead of Cardinals. But otherwise, the Mudcats dressed like most cowboy bands at the time. 10-gallon hats, cowboy boots, and bandanas around their necks. "I was perhaps the only manager who carried an orchestra," Frisch famously said. "We traveled with more instruments than we did shirts or anything else. All five core Mudcats played multiple instruments. Martin could also play accordion and banjo. Warnicky usually played first guitar, mandolin, or musical saw. According to his former manager, Charlie Grimm of the Cubs, he won't use a pick in playing his guitar or mandolin, says it is a sissy implement. Even though he sometimes suffered blood blisters as a result. Big Lon was also good at the fiddle and could play the cornet. The Mudcats had a big drum for their street performances, but for percussion, they depended on Frenchie Bordegray at first washboard. You know, running a stick up and down on it, as Terry Moore said. Frenchie also played fiddle and concertina, but the washboard was his signature instrument, especially after he rigged it with rubber bulb squeeze horns, bicycle bells, a three-tone telephone, and according to an AP article, even an electric light for special renditions, transforming it into an elaborate novelty percussion instrument. According to the Sporting News, Frenchie had a lot of other doojiggers like cowboys, Ozark flutes, and tom-toms, which he beat to a rhythmic frazzle. Whelan could play guitar, but he normally made music with a whiskey jug or washed tub bass, a homemade instrument consisting of a lard bucket, a long pole, and then one string. The Mudcats also loudly stomped their feet to keep time as part of their sound. For short performances, they stuck to just a few instruments. Pepper was the band's maestro, its leader who did most of the talking on stage. Fiddler Bill McGee was the heart and soul of the band musically, according to John Lardner, the author of its saddest, weirdest rhythms, a gut box twanger from the bluest hills, the pride and joy of the maestro, Mr. Martin. How he can fiddle, Martin would say, he makes me cry. Fiddlin' Bill has a technique all his own, wrote J. Roy Stockton. As the music gets hot, the fiddle slowly but steadily drops from his chin until it is resting against the middle rib. As Bill leans over with the faraway look in his eyes, just a stroking and a stroking those strings. Frenchie Bordigray was the band's spirit, its sensation, the prime instigator of Gashouse Gang country zaniness. The hillbilly band's sound has been compared to Spike Jonze's big band orchestra with its elaborate comical sound effects, placing Bordigray in the center of the Mudcat shows. When the Cardinals traded Bordigray, the AP story described Frenchie as the hula hula dancer for the Cardinals Mudcat band, and a better comedian than a ball player. The Mudcats performed an eclectic mix of music, 19th century folk songs, blackface minstrel music, Tin Pan Alley songs, cowboy waltzes and ballads, marches, square dance songs, fiddle tunes, novelty songs, Hawaiian steel guitar music, and Texas swing, sometimes with new lyrics about baseball. I know I have that here someplace. There we go, there's some music. So this one, the one over here, makes fun of the rival Cardinal managers. The Giants are crying, the Cubs are sighing. Everybody's afraid of the old Gashouse Gang. Terry, he is moaning, Grim, he is groaning. Trainer, he is foaming. Everybody's afraid of the old Gashouse Gang. Old Frankie will be a grinning when the Cardinals start a winning. When we start, the Giants are rolling down the hill. The Cubs will go a scooting when the Cardinals start a shooting. When we start, the ball will rolling down the hill. That's of all the except for one lyric of all the lyrics that Martin wrote. That almost all they were about baseball. They were joking about baseball. The hillbilly bands usually improvised. We never played the same way twice, Collins recalled. We'd start out one way and finish another. Often we'd play one number and switch to something else right in the middle of it. They practiced the corny, self-parodying, hee-haw humor of many hillbilly bands, but with a strain of jokes about baseball. On an early May road trip to New York, the Mudcats won a gig on Saturday Night Party, a musical variety show hosted by tenor James Melton on NBC, which also scheduled an interview with Dizzy Dean on a program later in the evening, making for a Cardinal night. Then on May 17th, cowboy film star and country western singing icon Gene Autry suddenly appeared at Union Station to greet the Mudcats and lead them in a parade to Sportsman's Park, with the future owner of the California Angels donning a white coat, chaps, and 10-gallon hat. The band wasn't 2 months old yet. Yet Autry recognized the publicity value in appearing with the Mudcats. But 4 days later, Cardinal President Branch Rickey demoted McGee to the Cardinals' AA team in Columbus, and he handled it pretty cruelly. McGee was scheduled to pitch that day, and he was in his uniform and had taken batting practice when he was called to Rickey's office. And he wept openly by his locker when he stripped off his uniform. He went home to Batchtown, Illinois, instead of reporting to Columbus, refusing Rickey's phone calls for 3 days. Rumors flew that McGee was thinking about filing a complaint with Baseball Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis. But he agreed to report to Columbus after Breeden promised to pay him his full major league salary. Bordegray, Warnke, and Whelan thought Ricky and Breeden were punishing McGee, quote, because he was paying too much attention to his music, according to Martin. Fearing their places on the Cardinals roster were also at risk, the three left their musical instruments at home on the next road trip. But McGee was undaunted and continued as a one-man band, according to Brooklyn Daily Eagle reporter Harold Parrott, performing with, quote, contraptions which hang around his neck so he could strum a guitar or banjo and blow on a harmonica at once and apparently play other instruments as well. Martin's determination to keep the Mudcat Band alive after McGee's demotion paid off. The remaining Mudcats regrouped after the Gashouse Gang returned from the road trip in June, and the Mississippi Mudcats continued to play without incident for the rest of the season. What Ricky actually was thinking about the Mudcats throughout the band's crisis, he never said. Martin moaned about the Mudcats needing a replacement for McGee the rest of the season, even calling for Ricky to trade for a fiddle player. My Mudcats ain't the same without him. He's the one real musician we had. But they continued playing mainly local events, and Martin also found ways to connect his promotion of his fighters to the promotion of the band. Having him play at a boxing card for Junior Munsell, his main protege, with Dizzy Dean refereeing one of the fights on the card. The Mississippi they were offered a 2 weeks in New York City to play for $2,000, but Martin turned that down. They were primed for bigger and more prestigious venues and larger paychecks in 1938. McGee was back to stay, and Max Lanier joined the core of the Mississippi Mudcats until he was sent down due to wildness. The rookie southpaw played guitar and harmonica, and his, quote, fine moaning mountaineer hillbilly voice improved the band's harmonizing. When Martin arrived in Florida, he told Breeden, I want it understood that not one of the Mudcats is to be sold or traded this season. You can't expect us to build up a fine musical organization and have you ruin it. It isn't fair to art. Even before spring training, in February, the Mudcats appeared in the Radio Stars Jamboree, a national competition among 24 hillbilly bands, including Gene Autry's Hollywood Cowboys and the Pine Ridge Band, the house band for the popular radio sitcom Lum and Abner. In St. Petersburg, the band was being invited to perform at Joe McCarthy's annual beefsteak dinner on St. Patrick's Day, the premiere of Rawhide, a Hollywood musical starring Lou Gehrig, and a Society Square dance at the St. Petersburg Golden Jubilee Spectacle, plus an American Legion boxing card with Martin's pride fighter Mudcat Fritz, a local hotel bellboy, matched against Batman Gardner, the Cardinals announcer, with Dizzy Dean as referee and the band working both corners. Perhaps in return for Breeden's gifts of instruments and hats and other paraphernalia, including a $200 guitar in Depression money for Martin, for the rest of the year, the Mudcats made appearances for the club before organizations like the Springfield, Missouri Kiwanis, the St. Louis Optimist Club, and the annual St. Louis Chamber of Commerce baseball dinner on the eve of the Cardinal and Brown season openers. But Ricky used the dinner to paint a target on the backs of the pitchers in the Mudcat Band. When he addressed fans who were angry about St. Louis's disappointing fourth place finish in 1937 and the trade of Dizzy Dean to the Cubs 2 days earlier. The Cardinals, he said, were the most talented team in Redbird history, if the pitching holds up. Medwick in June would blame the Mudcats for losing streak, for their losing baseball. Damn it, we are paid to play baseball, not to make carnival music out of a shoebox. Are we clowns or ball players? Frisch shut down the band in early April and threatened to do that several times in the season because of losing streaks. But the band continued to perform for the rest of the season, including exhibition games at Rochester and Portsmouth, Ohio. Their popularity grew to the point that Martin annoyed Ricky with the idea about changing the name of the Cardinals to the Mudcats. They earned $700 for appearing on the national radio show Ripley's Believe It or Not, and at the Chicago Armory, 7,000 fans showed up, their biggest audience, for a 10:30 a.m. show. Fans started gathering as early as 7. In the postseason, the band played vaudeville, getting somewhere between $1,500 and $2,500 a week. Warnke skipped the tour, so Collins acted as master of ceremony. They wanted to get Dodger pitcher Buddy Hassett, described as a silver-tongued tenor who had his own vaudeville career, but they settled for Olaf Brown, a barefoot harmonica player who claimed to be a minor league pitcher that the band picked up hitchhiking. Baseball Reference has no record on Olaf Brown. So their act, they were the last act, the headline act, of 5 acts on vaudeville, along with an old-fashioned vaudeville talking skit starring Broadway actor Milton Douglas, a dog act, Carlton Emmy and his Mad Wags, acrobats the Gilbert Brothers, and the 12 Aristocrats, a dance ensemble. And then these were followed by a Hollywood movie. They changed things up from Indianapolis to Dayton, where Pop Haynes introduced the band, and they had a different mix of acts there. The band's 14-minute show was organized loosely around traditional hillbilly fare and baseball talk. Olaf was featured on harmonica on the tune Just Because. Pepper told baseball stories and teased Collins about the Cubs losing the World Series. Collins danced a soft shoe and asked Martin questions about baseball. He said, "Pepper used to wear a 10-gallon hat and he had all the answers to my questions copied down inside the hat. Frequently he'd get excited and come up with an answer to a question I hadn't yet asked. Then he'd toss the hat into the wings and the entire act was up for grabs." Local newspaper critics wrote positive reviews, but Variety wrote that the Mudcats held little talent, were hardly strong enough to rate a headline billing, and were greatly in need of their rep on the diamond to put them over. But the critic thought that their original song, "Willie, My Toes Are Cold," was nifty. Pepper got homesick after Fort Wayne, and so they didn't complete their tour. That was it for the band, pretty much. Even while the tour was going on, Bordegore was demoted to Rochester and was later traded to Cincinnati. The new manager of the Cardinals was Ray Blades was hired, and he was not a fan of the band. And so Martin knew that the band and his other activities would be part of the negotiations for his contract. And when the contract negotiations were over, he said, "I'm concentrating on baseball now. The band isn't going to play anymore." But they did. One last time, find it here, in Cincinnati, And they ran across Frenchie Bordigray, who was playing for Kansas City in the American Association. They played a, they did a street concert on Vine Street, and drew a big crowd. Wieland pitched his final game in the big leagues. 4 days later, all but Warnke were gone from the Cardinals within in just over a year. Martin talked about forming a Mudcat band on, for, in Sacramento, where he was player manager, but that never happened. And the press mourned the end of the Mudcat band as the end of the Gas House Gang era. Thank you.
Thanks. That must have taken a lot of work to come up with all that detail. Two quick questions. One, do they ever play the Grand Ole Opry? And the second question is, are there any recordings of their playing extant?
There's only one recording that I know of. The New York Public Library of the Performing Arts, Sarah had a film clip of the Mudcat Band that they used to serenade people entering an exhibit in 2008 on music and baseball. They never recorded anything for public, which wasn't unusual. The market for that dropped out, for music recordings dropped out with the Great Crash. They did some recording just for themselves, single records, but apparently none of them survived. No, they didn't play the Grand Ole Opry. There was a big advantage that they could travel around the country without having to pay for the tour, but it limited them to cities where the Cardinals played.
Nice. Thank you.
Great presentation. Did the Cardinals, who were then run by Branch Rickey, ever try to use this to market the team in St. Louis? And why no banjo?
Why no banjo? I think they were Martin and them were listening to mainly to Bob Wills, Gene Autry, the South Central bands, and Martin wasn't really comfortable at first playing the guitar. He picked up the banjo later. I think it never became part of the sound for that reason. And did they use the band's publicity? Yes, but it famously backfired when in Rochester for an exhibition where they arrived in town and there were signs about the band all over the place to be played before the Cardinals game, but they never mentioned the ball game.
Just a couple of things. Looks like the Choo Choo to Broadway was a takeoff of Hold Tight. And then you mentioned the banjo. Did Charlie Grimm, who was a banjo player, ever play with them?
It's so many. Most of their performances are there's nothing written about them, including right their long performances, the things they did all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if Grimm sat in with them when they visited Chicago. I think Dean probably did, and Collins did. But there's no record of it.
When I was a kid, I had a record that was famous stories from old players, and they had an interview with Frankie Frisch, and he said, they show up in some city, I forget where it was, he said, I come up for a press conference, and I'm the only man who travels with an orchestra. There's four chairs for my orchestra. Over there's a poster. Down in the Mudcat Band will play here today. And down in the corner's a picture of Ben Wick, and over here a picture of Eyes.
Well, thank you very much.